Are we good to go? Go. We're good to go. We're good to go. We are four cartoonists and we make a podcast. Four cartoonists. Let me introduce each member of our cast. Four cartoonists drawing little comics from the town of LA. It's Dave Kellett with Sheldon.
Be aggressive. Be aggressive.
Webcomics Weekly.
How's it going, Nora?
That's the mood I thought you were going with. All right.
No, we are back after a week hiatus so that our good friend Brad could attend the Katsukon.
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 To Brad Geiger at the Katsukon.
My first anime convention. It was very nice.
And your last anime convention.
Hey, how many more will you be doing, exactly?
Yeah, how many more will we be doing, Brad?
I had a very good time at Katsukon.
Uh-huh. First and last, it's always the same. Everyone's first anime con is also at the same time their last anime con.
I keep hearing good things, but it just hasn't happened.
I don't know who.
You know, it was really something. This was the first convention I've ever gone to that the people in costume outnumber the people in street clothes at a good 8-to-2 ratio.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
It was amazing.
But for no reason, like because it's finally their turn to wear that stuff and not be judged.
It was truly something to behold. Walking into the lobby of the Omni Sheridan and seeing all these people, you know, seeing a half dozen Sailor Moons and all these people just in amazing costumes. And the bellman, you know, kind of looking around like, you know, I think we've lost control of this situation.
That's the
scary
part.
Imagine being the poor, like, 65, 72-year-old bellman. He's like, I've had this job for... What is all this? What?
Imagine the people who are there on vacation.
Well, I know. That crossed my mind, too.
Well, that's what happened to Chris and I when we went to... what was it? Anime Fest?
Yeah,
it right. was this just ridiculous display of inmates fresh. Like it was like a bunch of inmates that got a weekend R&R at a hotel. And Chris and I, who are, you know, we're not new to seeing weirdos at conventions. We were getting freaked out. We were, and so. We would just go down the lobby, and in comes the other convention that's at the hotel
like
that weekend.
The dental convention.
It wasn't dental. What was it? It was some Christian youth thing, and we're just like, no, not this weekend.
Yes.
Well, the best part of what Brad's story, Brad, tell him what you were telling me when you said, "Well, so I got my new credit card system all ready to go for the new con," and
oh, yeah. I had to set this whole thing up where I was going to take credit cards using a laptop and PayPal. And we had gotten an email a week before the convention saying, if you're going to have a laptop and wireless internet, you might want to second guess it. There is a hacker convention directly across the street. A convention of hackers.
Nice.
Directly across the street. So I did not get a chance to beta test my zany new system.
Oh man, Brad, I have an honest question to ask you about the anime con though. When you talk to people at the con and they were in costume, how many of them did not break character?
None of them were particularly in character. At least the ones that talked to me.
It must be a good con.
You must have had a good con.
There was nobody who was like trying to be like a wizard or you know something. They were all. Just people that were in costume.
We couldn't find a person who wasn't in character to find any common ground to speak with them on.
Yeah, that was our problem.
Yikes.
It was scary. Well,
that would make being at a convention on our side of the table really difficult.
Yeah.
Well, you can't make a pitch or anything because they're acting the plot out. And
yeah, it's like
you're an entry point.
Dragon Lord Maguto does not want book. It's like, all right, champ. You know what?
Yeah, it was like that. It was like, hey, would you like to see our red comic? Oh, what is this? Strange? Oh, I see. You are a bard and you have stories to tell. Okay.
all right. You know,
okay, Trevor, as much as I appreciate that you're
Trevor
costume.
Brad, you're like, I understand that you work as a claims adjuster all week and this is your only chance to act out, but right. Can you act like a human being for 10 minutes?
And then you see him starting to wilt, and then you go, yeah, all right, Dragon Master, tell me what is your...
and then, Chris, the chest immediately puffs back out again. Ha! All right,
so let's introduce.
Shall we get going?
Listen, we got to pick this up. This is going to go way over 15 minutes. So,
Let's hurry.
Pull
it up.
Come on.
Start a question.
Dave,
one.
Brad, Chris, and Scott.
You know us.
Guys. You can find
us. You know us. You love us.
Hugs all around.
Well, Dave, do you have that first question up?
I do have the first question up, Bradley, and let me pull that up right now as I say that I have it up. All right, so let's start off with the you know what, Brad? I'm gonna second guess you. I want to start with the how to learn how to cartoon question. Is that all right?
That's fine by me.
All right, so this one's from James Robertson, and here we go. I was wondering what sort of education you all had in cartooning. I've listened to all the podcasts and read all the comics and blogs daily, but it's kind of unclear as to how you all learned. Did you go to art school or learn from books or a combination of both? I'm asking because I have no artistic talent whatsoever, but I feel like I could come up with the writing half of a good strip and would maybe start trying my hand at the drawing part of it. Are there any good resources you could recommend? I'm just sort of curious as to how you all got started, in short. Thanks for your time. And that's James Robertson, no website yet.
Boy,
who wants to tackle that one?
I wish there was like a college. There was a collegiate.
I don't know if anybody. How does anybody formally learn to be a cartoonist?
Well, before we get into
specifically,
before we get into how we did it, there are two colleges. There's the Savannah College of Art and Design down in Georgia. They teach a class or a whole course in a whole program in sequential art. And another one, the new one that's in, where is it, Vermont or thing that the those three guys started? Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Mm-mm.
No, I thought you were going to say the second one was the Joe Kubert School.
That's where I thought you were, too.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. I forgot about that one. But there's also, hold on, I'm going to look it up while you guys keep talking. Somebody go.
Would any of you recommend anyone spend money on a college degree in cartooning? Because I wouldn't.
No, I would not.
I got to say, I was preparing to make the same remarks.
Yeah.
Okay, I found the other one, by the way. It was a Center for Cartoon Studies in White River Junction, Vermont. But yeah, Scott, I don't know that any of us would recommend that. But go ahead, Brad. You had the...
Well, the only trepidation I had with it was the fact that I would love sometime 10, 20 years down the road to see if I could con somebody into a job teaching cartoons at a university, you know.
And I
don't want to, you know, shoot myself in the foot. But no, I don't think I would suggest anybody... other than in the case of if you really think you've got what it takes to be a comic book illustrator on the level of Marvel, DC, Image, Dark Horse, and you go to the Kubert School, that I could kind of understand. But as far as being a comic strip artist or a cartoonist in terms of single panel, political cartoon, stuff like that, I think your time is much, much better spent broadening your mind and putting as much in your brain as you possibly can, so that when it comes time to write jokes, you can you've got a lot to draw on.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Scott. Why, let's examine the why we would recommend that more than the how. I think one of the reasons why we'd recommend that is, for me anyway, twofold. One is because statistically speaking, you need to have a balanced skill set just in life, because the odds are for the 5 or 10 years you're not going to be making a living from your cartooning, and you need to balance out sort of your skill set portfolio. But even aside from that too, I think you can only write or draw what you know, and if you only know cartooning, you're a less interesting artist, I think.
That's exactly what I was trying to say, yeah.
So
I have two angles to come at this from. And it's really funny that this question got brought up on the show today, because I had kind of an epiphany today, kind of a terrifying epiphany of self-doubt. I've been really hooked on This American Life, that NPR show. And they were talking to a guy who had found his diary from when he was a kid. His mother was Israeli, his father's American. And he's reading his diary from when he was 16. And the diary made him cringe, because he remembers the purpose of writing that diary was so that there'd be a record for one day people to follow what he was like before he was the president or the prime minister of Israel.
Okay.
And so now he's looking back at it, and he's a correspondent on public radio, and the host is saying, what would the 16-year-old version of yourself think of you now that you're on TV or on radio and millions of people can hear you? And he said he would be disappointed. A million people, what's that? That's nothing. I'm going to be a Zionistic leader and lead my people. I did not make it. And it dawned on me that I succeeded at accomplishing what I wanted to be at 16. Like, if you went back in time and showed 16-year-old Scott Kurtz what I'm doing now, I would be jumping up and down saying, I knew it, I knew it. But rather than that bring me some kind of pleasure or contentment now as an adult, it just terrifies me, because
I was going to say, I'm not sure how this is leading to the terrification.
Terrification?
The terrification.
That's awful.
Because, Brad, if someone told you that you're adult life is going to be based on a business plan or a life plan made by a 16-year-old, would you tell them to bring it on, or would you tell them to climb a tree?
That depends on the business plan.
Well, I don't know, man.
And the 16-year-old.
I mean, this 16-year-old didn't know anything about web advertising. This 16-year-old didn't know anything about how to market a book and self-publish. This 16-year-old didn't know half the stuff that you know. He just knew out.
Those are the accoutrements that I, the minutiae that I bury myself in when I don't want to think about it. But are those real, or are those just constructs so I can feel better about the fact that I have decided to spend the rest of my life drawing funny pictures in boxes, and there's no retirement plan, there's no 401k, there's no health care, and also, what about the fact that from especially my strip and my brand of humor is based on the pretense that I will stay in touch with the pulse of any audience? You know, I'm already losing touch with the pulse of an audience, the young crowd, and I'm, you know, because I'm 37, I'm not 17 or 27 anymore. So, I don't know. It's a frightening thought, and it almost seems like it's a career that I have despite the fact that I shouldn't, or it's a career that I chose despite the fact that it's probably a bad idea. But I'm doing it anyway, and I get very nervous when I have to advise anyone else to do it. I mean, I guess that didn't stop me from writing a book, but when
this is not the time for the self-doubt. You gotta push that book. Come on.
Ixnay on the self-doubt,
Well, look, there's a difference between saying put up a webcomic and see what happens. The worst that could happen is you make extra money. But when you tell someone to spend a college education's amount of money on cartooning, right, we're talking about a much different animal.
That's true.
Yeah. And that's why I think, because I don't want to make it sound like I don't think you should study art and I don't think you should study the elements of cartooning. I think if anything, get yourself a classical painting degree or a classics arts degree. Learn the rules that cartooning bends first. You know, you might be better off than I am right now.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's not that I'm saying don't study art. I think what I'm saying is study the broader world that cartooning builds upon and bends. You know,
I would even argue against an art degree. I would tell you to get a business degree.
Here's the question, though, Dave. Do you think that if a school offered a cartooning degree, wouldn't they cover those foundational topics unless they were an awful school and decided, I'm going to show you how to draw a crazy face? You know, that's not enough.
No, I know for a fact that SCAD does, that they offer foundation drawing, foundation painting, all that sort of stuff. I don't know about the Center for Cartoon Studies in Vermont, but yeah, you're probably right, Chris. But I think since this is a public kind of soapbox that we're all standing on, I think we have to be aware of the fact that there are people from all walks of life that listen to this, and it's I don't know, I feel like it's a little bit dangerous to say, yeah, study cartooning, you're going to be fine. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, but Dave, don't you also think that it makes more sense to tell someone to study to – it almost seems like cartooning works better when it's a side project because yeah. If you think about it, I did go to college to be a cartoonist, but all of my cartooning skills – and I mean I still believe this is that the best cartooning skills I have don't involve art or writing. It's all observation. It's learning mm-hmm. to be a good observer.
Yeah, and you know what? For that, to that point, I would suggest maybe taking some improv classes, some acting classes, learning how to study how people move and think, and different personalities, and that can be really instructive as a writer and as a cartoonist. You know,
well, anything you put in your brain is gonna help you out. You need to know as much about everything as you possibly can because you never know what kind of reference is going to help you out. I was driving down the street just this morning, and a joke started forming in my head, and I realized that I didn't know, as strange as it sounds, I didn't know enough about Hinduism to complete the joke. And I'd have to go in and start researching that, and it wouldn't be impossible. But if I had that in my brain already, I'd have all those references ready-made to go.
Right.
But going back, and I want to underline this to make sure that it doesn't get glossed over, what Scott said is absolutely true. A good cartooning class or maybe a replacement for a cartooning degree would be a business degree, knowing how to market, knowing how to do all those things that we're grappling with as small business people, sussing up the profit margin on a book, how low does the cost have to be, factoring in distribution, all this other stuff. That's all stuff that we're all taking daily crash courses in business management that, if we would have done this at college, it would have been a lot easier for us, I think.
Yeah,
say that you learned the bulk of cartooning itself by yourselves.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
true.
If I had to design sort of a perfect cartooning academic career for somebody, I think it would be a double major, small business or entrepreneurship, and a liberal arts major. Because I think Brad hit on something that is critical with upper education and is critical to the formation of a cartoonist or any type of writer, which is you have to learn how to learn. College, right. Especially Western schools, colleges aren't so much rote memorization or any of that sort of stuff. You learn how to go to resources. You learn how to find knowledge when you need knowledge. So I'm sure Brad, even though he didn't know what he needed to know about Hinduism, he knew how to look it up. He knew how to research the right sources. And that's the sort of thing you need as a cartoonist is – like Scott said, how do you read people? And second, how do you mesh that with true information in the world so that you can bend both to your, mm-hmm. your need? You know. So, but part of that question was how did we do it? And who wants to tackle that one first? How did we become cartoonists?
Let's each tackle it.
Well, go ahead and start, Chris.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I've been drawing since I was, I don't know, 4 years old, and I don't think that I've improved a whole lot. But I didn't go to art school. I went to college for a technical degree, and which I'm actually currently not using a whole lot of. But everything I learned about cartooning, I learned through just self-motivation and interest in studying the work of people that I liked and looking at how they drew it and just drawing a lot. I never had a formal background. Succinct? Done?
Well,
let me go. We're going to finish this podcast.
Talk for a second about your self-training, because I think that's just as important.
That's tough. The only thing I can really... I hate to say practice, but I remember the time in my life when I decided I need to learn to draw hands because when I was maybe 11 or 12 years old, I still couldn't draw hands. I just drew, everybody had just paws. And I thought, I've got to learn, otherwise I'm not going to go any further. So I just looked at Calvin and Hobbes collections and looked at how he drew Hobbes' hands And I think that more than anything, and just doing that over and over and over again, is how I learned to do it eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But it requires, and feedback is good to have, because you don't want to go off in your corner and learn to do it wrong and then announce to the world, I've done it. I learned to draw hands, and here they are. And they're all twisted mockeries of anatomy. So I don't know. I just constantly was drawing and reexamining how I was drawing and questioning whether or not I had gotten there yet. And the answer is that you never do get there. But that, I would imagine that each of us has that story.
Well, Scott, what did you say your training was?
Well, I was always interested in drawing, and my mom encouraged it. So did my dad. I used to draw stories like in books. I used to write picture books. And I drew, I guess my first comic book I ever drew as a kid was a story about like a magical land where everyone was noses, you know, like they were just noses with hands and feet. And everyone was sneezing, and no one could figure out what it was. And then it turned out it was dust from the leaves of the trees was falling on them. My mom went ape crap over that. She just thought it was so creative that I had come up with it. And in the fourth grade, she got me the first Garfield book in Walden Books, and I read it, and I was like, wow, this is better than picture books. This is better than Richard Scarry activity books. This is
better than Busy Town.
Yeah, and so then, you know, it was, that's all I ever wanted to be from the fourth grade on, was I'm going to be a cartoonist when I grow up. I'm going to have my own comic strip. And so I taught myself just through sheer imitation. And maybe when I got older and in high school and junior high and high school and college, you get more sophisticated about hiding it. But that's all you really do, is you just imitate your way into knowing how to do it. And then I think when you get, at least for me, when I got into high school, I really thought I knew all there was to know. I thought I was the best. And, when I got into college and started taking art classes and kind of got my first taste of like the art world and the whole, not just art wasn't just, okay, let's sit down and work on a project. It was also, let's sit around in coffee houses and discuss the philosophy of it. You know, it had never occurred to me that art was anything more than we're either going to draw or sculpt or paint or do something that's crafty. You know, it wasn't let's sit at the coffee house and discuss if we take a toilet bowl and then we put it surrounded by shrubbery that changes the context of the toilet bowl, and that's art. And everybody sits around debating the philosophy of it. So,
and snapping their fingers in approval.
Right, exactly.
Wow. Hey, man, that's a great feeling you got going on, daddy-o.
So I went to college with the intention of being an art teacher. I was going to study art education because my plan was I could teach during the year, and then I'd have summers off to try to become a cartoonist.
Mm.
And I would also have teacher in-service days, you know, like assuming I would not be working on teacher in-service days. But I'd have summers off to work on cartooning. And I hated the art education curriculum at UNT. It seemed like, well, it was all girls and all of the classes were really trite and more about lesson plans. I wasn't learning any art. And I had all these friends doing advertising art. And it was like, why aren't you in here? Because all this commercial art you can learn, typography and graphic design, all of that can apply to your cartooning. And so it was a real change of philosophy for me, because for me going to college was trying to find a good job that could support me trying to become a cartoonist, as opposed to looking for a way to better my cartooning. It never occurred to me I would learn anything in college that would help me with cartooning. And then I switched to advertising art. But most of my college, most of my cartooning education in college was at the school newspaper. And I don't even know if that's a big deal anymore now with the internet. Is it on college campuses?
Student newspapers in general? I hear of a lot of people, you know, where you say, oh, yeah, I was a college, I was the cartoonist at my student newspaper. You know, it still seems to be things that I hear a lot.
Well, I know that Sheldon runs in like 15 newspapers, so there must be some still out there.
Right. Well, but what I'm saying is that I spent a lot of time in the actual newsroom. I knew all the people. I knew all the writers. I sat in on the meetings.
Right, right.
And just got excited about playing newspaper, essentially. And so that was what was really exciting for me, because it was an application of it as opposed to just theory. Because in classes I was learning theory, typography and all that. But at the newspaper, it was, there's going to be a rally about this. How can we, you know, how can we write about it? And then I would say, how could I satire it? You know, how could I satirize it? And, a real quick story, my roommate at the time, we used to go to parties all the time, and of course, as happens in college, everyone gets drunk out of their minds, except for me and my roommate, Mike. Mike, not because he didn't drink, but we're at one party, and some guy comes up to me, and he's like, why don't you ever get drunk at these parties? And my roommate, Mike, got really kind of bitter and mad, and he goes, he's working. And I looked at Mike, and I went, what? And he goes, you're writing comics. You do this at every party. You just sit in the back and watch everybody, and then it's in the paper. And it never dawned on me that that's what I was doing. I went to parties and I observed people and I made mental note of it. And then all of a sudden it was in my strip. And but Mike had noticed it and he didn't like it. And so when that guy came up, I was like, how come you never get drunk, Kurtz? And Mike just went, oh, he's working. Don't you know? He's writing comics. You're the star of his strip.
Well, that
so,
is.
I mean.
So you started getting drunk from now.
So, yeah, that's when I started getting drunk. of all my friends that I met in college that had were working towards art degrees, none of them have jobs in art. I'm the only one. I dropped out. I never finished. They all got their degree. They all finished. They all mocked me for not finishing. And they had art degree. They had art jobs maybe for 1 to 5 years out of college. But now one's a minister and one is working. Most of them are working in computers. But nobody has art degrees. No one has art jobs. I'm the only one. I dropped out and played video games, and they mocked me, and I have the art job. So, but yeah.
It's not just the schooling that does it.
It's what?
It's not just the schooling that does it.
No, it's not the schooling, because you can get that anywhere. I mean, especially now. I don't even know how much you could learn in college about typography and the craft. I mean, college
probably
is mostly
a lot, but just knowing it doesn't mean that you can apply it.
Right,
right, and that's the key. Is that yeah, you'll learn a heck of a lot. There's nothing you can't learn in terms of typography and that sort of stuff from a school. But Chris is right; it's the daily application of it that makes the difference.
Well, Dave, I know you've got an interesting story about your education.
Okay, yeah. So I, like you guys, I started cartooning early. I remember specifically; I think it was in the third grade. And strangely enough, I still have the three notebooks that I started cartooning in, and they're sort of fun to pull out every couple of years.
That is awesomely rare. I wish I had anything from when I first started.
I don't know why, but I don't know why, but I was sort of type A about it for a third grader, that I kept them all in the same three spiral notebooks, so they all sort of stayed together, you know?
Back in the day when you were type A. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, the stinging. Oh, the
Another Web Comics Weekly burn.
Brad, Dave, Brad, keep going.
Can I tell you, Brad, my face actually is red right now.
Wow, the revenge of Brad.
I actually have a warm face. Thank you, Brad. So anyway, back when I was more of a carefree child, I would cartoon. And oh, man, that cut me to the core.
Oh, no, so, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I've got...
No, David, no, you're really good, Brad.
Brad, if I could...
This is your shot.
If I couldn't take it, I have no right to dish it out. But I didn't like Scott was saying though. I didn't really pick up speed with it. I guess is one way to say it until high school. And I think if high schoolers can, high school and college papers, man, there is no better training than doing for me, it was a college paper, because even though Notre Dame didn't have a journalism school, they had a daily paper, which I guess is sort of rare. And I would love it because every weekend at a party or, you know, walking to class, Notre Dame was small enough where, you know, you kind of knew everybody and you kind of didn't know everybody. So I'd be walking across a quad and people would go, "Yesterday sucked," or, you know, "Oh, I like yesterday's talent," you know, that sort of thing. So you'd know right away. And it was such a great testing ground for, like, what works, what doesn't, what gets a reaction, what doesn't, that sort of stuff. And so when I, but before I went on to school, I remember I had a couple, I don't know what you, I sort of set up, like, I guess you'd call them interviews, but basically I sat down with cartoonists in San Diego and I said, you know, what do I need to study? What, because I had no idea what I wanted to do in college. And they said, well, I'll give you some advice. And this goes back to that conversation we had the other week, where we disagreed about what's more important, the art or the writing. And they said, how many, you want to be a comic strip cartoonist? And I said, yes. And they said, how many poorly written comic strips do you see in the page? And I said, besides Andy Cap, and that was the joke. But the idea basically was that, you know, you need your writing more than you need your art. You can teach yourself to be an artist, but learn the craft of writing. So I intentionally went and studied literature for my undergrad degree. And I during the summers, I got an internship with the San Diego Union Tribune, which, if there's still a surviving paper in your city, I would recommend that. And I got to do two editorial cartoons a week on Saturdays and Mondays for them when I was in college, which is awesome. And then for grad school, I tried to get a graduate or a scholarship to go to England, and it didn't work out. So I went home to San Diego to UCSD, and I did a master's degree on 18th century cartooning, and studied how those early guys, Hogarth and Gilray and all the Brits, basically created the art of public cartooning and the public sphere. And it was really kind of cool, and you know, totally useless aside from the fact that I knew that someday I didn't want to just be a cartoonist. I wanted to teach cartooning, you know. So I never really wanted to learn the physical act of cartooning, but I wanted to learn the sort of academic act of cartooning. So I did that degree at UCSD. And then I started to work in L.A., but I ended up getting another scholarship to go to England. So I went to the University of Kent, which is in Canterbury, and they have a whole center there that studies – it's an academic angle. It's the Center for Cartoon and Caricature Studies at the university. And so I got a different degree there in World War II propaganda of cartooning. And at the same time, I was working in the British Cartoon Archive as a curator of cartoon art. So it's sort of like what Ohio State has. And that's when I was in England, it was like 97, 98, I started putting Sheldon up online to share with folks back home in the U.S. And that's how I started getting into the web, because I remember going online and the only people online were like Sluggy and Scott and Steve Troop. And you know, four or five other guys, and I was like, "How are they doing this?" It was like you guys were like magic workers to me. This was way, way back. Mm-hmm. And I remember I used to manually update my site and all that sort of stuff. But basically, I did the academic side, but like Chris said, all the nuts and bolts of cartooning I had to teach myself. And I think actually that's a good way to do it. You take as much academic learning as you can in terms of liberal arts or art, as the case may be. And but at the same time, you're working every day on your own craft, because it's such a unique thing that really any cartooning school is going to have you doing the same thing that we're recommending you do anyway, which is draw every day, cartoon every day.
Right.
So that was my path. So, Brad, what was yours?
I don't want to belabor it too much, but I did everything that I would probably suggest that people today not do. I came as close to getting a cartooning degree as you can get without actually getting the cartooning degree. I got a BFA, a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree with an emphasis in illustration, and my entire senior thesis was either editorial cartoons or a comic strip that was kind of the predecessor to Greystone Inn. And they brought in Bill Day, who was the editorial cartoonist for the Detroit Free Press, to juror the show. And he gave me the advice over dinner that night that, you know, if I wanted to get into cartooning to get a job at a newspaper, and not necessarily as a cartoonist, but as a graphic artist, because there was all these opportunities, especially then. This we're talking the early 90s, and Apple computers had started to come out with their Macintosh line that was really kind of changing the design world. And there was a real need and a real want for graphic designers who knew Mac, and that was me. And he said, you know, get into a graphics department, not on the advertising side, but in the newsroom. And then you can submit your cartoons on the side. And that's what I've been doing ever since. I started out in Canton at the repository, and I was kind of like the de facto editorial cartoonist there, and I could submit cartoons anytime I wanted, as many times as I wanted. The editorial page editor was very supportive. And I just kind of went up through there, and now I'm kind of doing the same thing at the Daily News, doing a number of comics projects for the newspaper, like Fables and Courting Disasters. Those are both created for the Daily News. But if I were to go back and do it over again, I don't know that I would have gotten that BFA degree. I think I would have gotten something along the lines of what we've been talking about earlier, getting the writing, you know, working on my writing a little bit more and working on the business aspect.
Yeah.
Can I add something here at the tail end?
Go ahead.
This topic, I'm so glad that I went first. Because we could have had a buildup of, well, I worked at the British Cartoon Museum, and I started in graphic design, and I actually dropped out. I was the only one who made it. I read a lot of Calvin and Hobbes, and then a quarter century later, here I am.
Well, no, I think we all did that, too. I mean, that's how I really think we learned. The best way to learn cartooning is what we tell people to do. Start a cartoon, update it on a regular basis, and check on your progress in 2 years, because that's the way to learn, by doing it.
Yeah, it's a very long process.
Can I ask you guys a quick question, because this is sort of fun, and I've actually been meaning to ask you guys this for a couple weeks. If you had to name, like, the top three, who are the top three cartoonists in either comic books, cartoons, editorial, you know, illustration, that made you want to be a cartoonist?
Jim Davis, Burke Breathed, and then Bill Watterson, in that order.
I'm having a hard time coming up with the third one, but I know Bill Watterson, number one, Don Martin, and, God, who else did I like? Oh, yeah, Brad Anderson, Marmaduke. Classic. Or his son.
Chris, have you seen they've put out a book of all of Don Martin's work?
No.
All of his Mad Magazine cartoons? Yeah, they've got it in one big volume, kind of like that Calvin and Hobbes two-book volume set. Just as
an aside. I just saw that last week.
That book does exist.
Oh, awesome.
I thought you were going to say there's a big, like, Marmaduke omnibus.
Well, that too. Anything Marmaduke has got to be big, because, you know, he's a big dog.
And you know what, Brad?
That is the joke. The entire strip.
Because the dog is just so darn big.
It gets him into trouble a little bit.
He thinks he's people.
For me, it was Burke Breathed was like number one on my list. I got a subscription to the Detroit Free Press in college just so I could read Bloom County every day. The rest of the paper got thrown away. I just needed my Bloom County every day. Burke Breathed, number one. Bill Watterson, number two. Pat Oliphant, number three.
Tied
with Tom Tolles. Because back in the 90s, I really wanted to be a political cartoonist, and that's how I got into this whole thing. And between Pat Oliphant and his amazing art, and Tom Tolles and his phenomenal writing, that's who I thought was cartooning to me at that point.
Yeah. Wow. I've never heard anyone say Tom Tolles. That's an interesting one, Brad.
Oh, I adore him.
Oh, no, he's great. It's in a
manly way. I didn't mean to make you pause there. It's an adoration. That manly. So who's your top three there, David?
I would also have to go with Breathed. I think as far as finding a unique voice, not even so much his art style, but that dude had a unique voice that I don't think I've ever seen in comic strips before or since. He was just amazing. And then strangely enough, considering my art style, John Byrne, when he was doing Alpha Flight, I don't know if you remember those years.
Yeah, I've got those, yeah.
Like the first 10 or 15 issues of Alpha Flight. I mean, I've always loved John Byrne's art when he was doing X-Men and stuff, but for some odd reason, when he was doing Alpha Flight, like his drawings of Sasquatch specifically was I was just enthralled with it. It was so beautiful. And then the third one is David Lowe, who I don't know if you guys know. He was a British World War II political cartoonist, and he drew standing up using Japanese brushes, and his artwork is gorgeous. I mean, his caricatures of Hitler were some of the most beautiful things you've ever seen. And like, Hitler actually had him on his to kill list when they invaded Britain. Oh. He was in the top 100 of people to kill in Britain, and he was so amazingly good. And really, just he was Australian, and moved to Britain because they had the biggest papers in the world at that time. And anyway, just a fantastic artist. So those are my three.
Wow.
Well, all right.
I'm going to pick up David DeLoe now. Well, I think we've pretty much done that question pretty good justice. What do you think?
Sure, yeah, Brad. Why don't we tuck into yours? You had a next one ready to go.
Let's see. We've got one that says this. Let's do the one on the numbers. He says, this guy Patrick writes in, he says, let's talk about audience numbers. Now, I know usually when the topic of audience size and hits comes up, the response usually is, quote, don't let that concern you, draw the comic because you want to do it, unquote. Yeah, that's great for hobbyists. What about the aspiring pros and even the pros? What is a good average number of hits per update? I say update because some comics are daily and others have schedules. What's the phenomenal number of daily hits? What do you think the minimum should be to consider a comic to be a success? And at one point, should a person just admit that their comic isn't working and move on to a new project? A few other thoughts on this. If you're not a pro, what's a good number to aim for at your comic? What's a good starting point? How long should you can see where he goes here. He's really interested in a number. He wants us to give him the magic number. Christopher Straub, what is that magic number?
The magic number used to be 10,000 uniques. That was maybe 2 or 3 years ago. I don't know what the magic number is. This actually came up. I don't remember. I think it was a conversation that Fleen linked to. But somebody was asking the exact same thing. And for the longest time, I thought it was 10,000 uniques. It seemed like you could get a lot done with that size audience. And I got there, and I was getting nothing. It is not an automatic success reached, ribbon cut, hand me the bottle of champagne, it's done. So I don't really know. And I know that you can have a smaller than 10,000 uniques a day audience, and if they're more devoted, you will do better than somebody with a lackluster, kind of half there, half not audience of 25,000. So that number alone is really not enough to quantify success. It depends on what your definition of success is, but I imagine it's, I don't want to do anything else for a living.
Right, right.
See, I had the same thought when I read that question. As in all things, we want to know what number is, you know, what number can we say that we have arrived? And it's all about it's, and I think it might be a uniquely American thing, but it's all about competition at a number's pace. And in all things where you're measuring by number, it's not the size of the number, it's what you do with it. All right. It doesn't matter if you think. No. Think about it.
Brad, I need to hear this
now. And there are people right
now
that have 8,000 uniques a day and are making tremendous money from it because they've got a really loyal and rabid fan base. They've put their time in on building their community. They've done everything that we preach every week in and week out, and they're doing it. They're living the life. And there are people, I guarantee you, with 20,000 page views, or I'm sorry, 20,000 uniques every update, and they're saying, when does it start for me? So it doesn't, you can't give you a number. You shouldn't even be really concentrating on the number except to reassure yourself every week or so that that number steadily is growing and steadily is growing, but it's what you do with that number that really counts. Are you out there doing your community building? Are you, you know, keeping in touch with your fans? Are you doing the sorts of things that you need to do to make this website their place to express their selfness, if you will? You do that stuff, you don't worry about numbers anymore.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's sort of a there's a line that I think we have in the book where if I didn't include it, I should have included it, which is it's a concept that I'm trying to promote, which is earnings per reader, because I think that's a more it's a more important number even than readership. And you know, if you carry it to the illogical extreme, all you need is one reader if your one reader is Bill Gates or Warren right. Buffett, you know. But carried to a more normal and logical extreme, if you have 10,000, 20,000 readers that are and you're each making on average $8 on them, you're doing pretty good in terms of earning per reader. If you're making a buck off of each of them, you still got your day job, you know. So it's the earnings per reader, I think, is a more important concept even than a readership number.
And I've
killed both of you. No,
I think that relates to the idea that if you've got 30,000 readers, but if you ask them all to rank your or their favorite webcomics and you come in at number 11, then it doesn't matter that you have 30,000 because they've already spent all their money on comics 1 through 5.
Right.
But if you've got 7,000 and you're their number one, then and they have all of your T-shirts and all your books, then you're sitting pretty.
Right.
Now,
right.
I thought somebody was saying Brad. I've got a question that I want to address specifically at Scott because I know Scott has been doing this for a long time. He's had a lot of very good success, and I want to know this from you. Having said everything we just said, and we're all firm believers in it, do you ever stop checking your numbers, and are you ever satisfied with the amount that you have?
Well, I never stop checking them, but that's not necessarily due to an obsession to get them to rise. It's because there's business reasons to check your numbers. And I think the numbers that I have checked have changed too, because when it started out, it was volume. You know, is the number bigger today than it was yesterday? Mm-hmm. When I tracked my numbers with that old extreme tracking code, it was just to see that the graph was continuing to move up, and if it ever dipped, I was terrified. But now I check new versus returning users. Now I check to see what days of the week they're hitting the site the most. I check to make sure that all my numbers add up between what my host is reporting and what my ads are reporting. And what Google Analytics are reporting to make sure my numbers are all accurate across the board. To update my media kit so that my advertisers know what my current numbers are. And so it's not a matter of ever being satisfied. But, you know, this is something I've tried to explain to my brother, because Brian got really excited about search engine optimization on the website. And unless you are set up with an incredible advertising system, and that more page views automatically equals more money, then it may not be a smart thing to just, I don't know, I debate back and forth to bring in as many readers as possible, because you're taxed for that. You know, you have to pay for the hosting on the bandwidth. So right now, my website has grown beyond the hosting that's available for my server. And I'm having to actually, it's going to be cheaper for me to buy a second server and split the site between two servers to get extra bandwidth than to just pay for the extra transfer. So, and that's because my numbers have gone up. And I think it has to do with the fact that my website redesign encouraged people to read the archives more. And so, yeah, I mean, look, I did everything I could to get more people reading more of the site, and all I ended up with was more page views and a higher hosting bill. And now the hopes are that will translate into more interest and more new readers. And
hello.
Yeah. Hello. Chris?
What?
Hello.
Did we lose him? I think we lost him.
Can you guys still hear me?
Yeah, I can still hear you.
Looking at the screen, we just lost Chris.
I'll get Chris back. Okay.
That's something I just wanted to ask you while you're dialing. That's something I always wanted to ask you, Scott, because I remember the day that I was on GeoCities. I was updating Greystone Inn for about a month, and I saw that I had I was getting up to 80 visitors a day, 90 visitors a day. And there was one day that I was really excited. I told my wife, one of these days, you wait, I'm going to hit triple digits. I'm going to have 100 a day. And there was one day I bust her chops on this constantly. There was one day I looked at my stats the next day and I had 99 visitors that day. And I said, oh, Carolyn, I was so close. I can't believe it. I said, thank God you visited the site today because it would have been 98. That would have been no story. And she looked at me and she said, I forgot to visit it yesterday. And I said, there's my 100 right there. Yeah. And I still remember how excited I got over the thought of getting 100 people looking at that strip in the same day.
Yeah.
And now, 8 years later, if I looked at my sites and I saw that I had 100 readers yesterday, I'd slip my wrist.
Well, I mean, listen, Brad, don't you remember going back in time? Don't you remember moments in your life, especially once you got married, where you were saying privately to yourself, if I can just get a raise and make $20,000 a year, we'll be set. We'll never want for more. And then if I can just make 30 grand, if I can just get that raise and make 30 grand a year, we will be set for life.
If I can just get the car paid off, that's $300 in our pocket every month that we didn't have.
Right.
We will be on easy street. We've had the car paid off for 2 years and we're living no differently. I know exactly what you're saying.
So, yeah. I mean, it's going to grow with you. And so the question is, what are your immediate goals? If your immediate goals are to make some extra spending money, then you only need numbers that will afford you extra spending money. If you want to quit your day job, you need numbers that are going to afford you that goal. And I don't think the days of the person with the most page views wins exists anymore. If anything taught me – If Dave taught me anything in the last year, it was stop chasing Penny Arcade. Stop chasing the most page views ever. You know?
I taught you that?
Yes, you did.
How did I teach you that?
Because my goal...
How did I... Did you hear what I said? I said, how did I teach you that?
How did you teach me that? Well, you...
There's the clean
tank. Offered me your clean breast...
And,
nothing tag is obliterated.
Well, no, I was kind of beating my head against a brick wall chasing Penny Arcade, and it's not that's not a negative against them at all. They have done so much to assist me. They're my friends and they're my colleagues. But what I'm saying is, you know, you have to be realistic about who you are and what your limitations are and what you have, and so. What I was doing was I was trying to graduate from all kinds of things like, well, I know I've said this before, but you have a cafe press store because that's all you can afford. And then you decide you're going to make your own T-shirts. And then you start making your own T-shirts. And once you do that, you say to yourself, well, I've graduated from cafe press. I'll never go back. I've gone past that. You know, you do donations for a while to make some money, and then you start making money with advertising. And you say, "I'll never go back to donations. I've graduated from it. I've evolved past it." You know, and let's say you get picked up by Image. Well, I'll never have to self-publish again. You know, that's a bad attitude. That's a wrong attitude. You can't look at things in the sense of forwards and backwards. It just has to be what makes sense, what makes the most money, what's going to benefit your immediate goals.
What's right for you right now.
Exactly. And so, you know, I went to ThinkGeek, and I was pissed at what was happening at ThinkGeek. And there was, you know, there was some changeover, and there was not necessarily a person assigned to me. So there was no one at ThinkGeek that was worried about how much money PvP was bringing in. And so I didn't know what to do because I can't start selling stuff and shipping it out of my studio again. That's going backwards. I've graduated from that. And so I put it off. But, you know, then at the end of the year, you know, I'm struggling and I'm like, Dave, how much money did you make on inventory or on your store sales last year? And when he told me, I almost fell out of my chair. You know, and I thought, oh, I am thinking about this the completely the wrong way. It doesn't matter how many page views I have because Dave has much less than me, and he's making more money on merchandise than I did this year with my exalted numbers and my fancy ThinkGeek deal. He's kicking my ass. in income. And so I started chasing Dave Kellett, and I'm doing better for it.
Wow.
All right.
That's fascinating. Nice.
Really? I thought we've already talked about that.
Maybe we had, and I forgot. Let me just say, I appreciate that. That's nice words. Thank you for that.
Well,
you'd like
no.
to hear it again, Dave.
Dave, I appreciate it because look, page views are great, and I don't think I should discourage anyone from getting as many page views as possible. But page views don't pay the bills, you know.
Yeah.
Dedicated readers who support the strip pay the bills. Unless you just have a crack advertising team, and that's the thing. Like Google and AdsDAC and TextLink ads, they pay for my hosting. Because those are paying right now. But I get nervous about the advertising stuff. Because you could go 1 month where you make thousands and thousands of dollars in advertising. And then you go the next month and make $100.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing, too, is that advertising, even now, long after the dot-com boom and bust, it seems like it's such this weird roller coaster ride of income and non-income and... So I've really tried to avoid relying on it as a central income source, and that's why I don't chase page views anymore. Just because I don't think advertising is a reliable form of income. But anyway, what was the question again? We lost track of the question.
I don't know either.
Numbers.
We're still on. Where did you learn to draw?
No, but I just don't think you should chase.
That's not worth that laugh.
So it turns out. It turns out the eraser is the nubby end, and
the question was, where do you want to eat tonight?
20 minutes on.
All right, so I'm looking at Google Analytics right now. Let's look at my numbers real quick. Is there any reason why I shouldn't divulge numbers? Why would that be bad?
I don't know if there is or isn't, but I'm dying to hear them.
Brad's like, not at all.
Meanwhile, in the background, you can hear the click, 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 click of his pen as he's getting it down, right down.
So I'm looking at Google Analytics for PvP Online. This is the month to date, so January 22nd to February 21st. I've had 3.45 million visits. I've had 11.8 million page views with an average of 3.5 pages per visit. And around 2 minutes and 8 seconds average time spent on the site per visit. And 11.26% of them are new visitors. There's one stat on here I don't understand. I wish someone could explain it to me. Bounce rate.
That's
people who only looked at one page and then left.
Most webcomics is most of our readership because they're going to hit today's update and then just scoot on.
Oh, really? Okay, so 62.48% is my bounce rate.
Yeah, that's about what mine is.
Pretty
that's
good
right.
Bounce rate. I think mine is around 80%, if not a little bit higher. For a webcomic, I got to figure anything that goes towards 50% is awfully darn good.
Well, if you consider that most people come to my website and probably back up one strip and leave, that negates that bounce rate stat.
Right. I love, though, how as grown men were like, wow, I like your bounce rate. That's great.
And it looks like my lowest days are Sundays and... my biggest days are either Mondays or Tuesdays.
I think everybody's low day is Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think so. the most instructive thing I think we can tell people is that, and to make clear that numbers aren't everything, is, and we've had this discussion before, look at a syndicated comic strip. And for on average, for a small to mid-sized comic strip that's syndicated, you're looking at 150, 200,000, 300,000 readers probably. I mean, it's really hard to guesstimate, but that's how many it takes to make a living. With webcomics, you could conceivably be making a living with 10,000 readers.
And the reason for that is that those syndicated comics are not able to do the kind of community building that we can do. They can't address their readers the way we can. They're not able to make those personal relationships. So we can do a whole lot more with fewer readers.
The reason why I gave you those numbers for this last month is because, as impressive as those numbers may or may not sound, I don't consider that they had a direct result on my income for the month. Because if I go over what my big income draws for the month was, it was mostly, I don't know, maybe you can consider that for the store it is, because it's, I mean, I really feel like when I pitch a new item or a new product or a new special at the store, it raises my store income. So I guess you have to have the people to pitch it to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but just having them doesn't matter.
Yeah, you've got to, it really, there's other things that I could correlate my income to this month, and the only ones that really are affected by page views are the advertising. You know, and that's only a small portion of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just don't know if those numbers mean what they used to.
Yeah, it's a tricky thing, but that's why I think we say, especially when you're starting out, focus on your comic strip, because your impetus when you're starting out is going to be to look out at the world and say, you know, why aren't people coming? Why aren't they reading? Why aren't I growing? And the simple truth is that the world doesn't owe you an audience. You owe the world a good quality, consistent, on-time webcomic, and then maybe the world will give you an audience, and maybe it will grow.
And you're not going to get there until year two or year three of consistent updates. You just got to realize that. Unless you're one of these guys that break out, you know, way early, and you got to almost look at those like lottery winners. You know, they didn't know that they were going to do that either.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Let me ask you guys a question.
Go ahead.
I'm sure when you were starting out, you were checking your stats to see how many people were reading. At what number of uniques did you go, wow, this is that many people are reading right now? What number was that for you?
I think for me it was when I got to 10 or 15,000, something like that.
For me, it was 10,000. When I hit that round number of 10,000, it was something I literally called home and told Mom about, because that was a number that she was really going to be impressed by.
Oh, Brad, please recreate that phone call.
Well, you've got to play my Midwest mother.
Okay? I'll be the mom.
Okay,
No. I want to be the mom. Dave, you be Brad.
Oh, no, please.
You be Brad. Dave, you be Brad.
Okay, I'll be Brad.
Me. I'll just sit out and I'll enjoy it.
All right, here we go.
Okay, hold on. I'm Hello?
Oh, yeah, Mom. Hello, it's Brad.
Hello? Is this Brad?
Oh, Mom, don't you know it's Brad Geiger. How are you today, Mom?
Oh, Brad, there's no more petite marshmallows for my cocoa. Brad? Brad?
Yes, Mom, a man
missed a question on the Jeopardy show because he didn't know what Deuteronomy was.
Oh, gosh, Mom, gosh.
I can't believe it.
Oh, gosh, Mom. Listen, this is Brad Geiger calling with a quick point, Mom. Just want to make it real quick if you got a second.
This is Brad Geiger.
Yo, go ahead, Brad. You tell me your point.
Well, listen, Mom. So, listen, I don't mean to keep you away from the harvest, but I wanted to tell you a real quick. Oh, gosh. Of course, Mom, I got to tell you. So you know how Brad Geiger does that strip, you know, Greystone Inn. And he's also doing Evil Link now, Mom. Do you know that about Brad Geiger?
Don't confuse your mother.
Oh, anyway, Mom, looks like I got to go. I untied my shoe and I can't, you know.
Brad. Oh, Brad. You know you confuse me with those stories. Are you wearing warm clothes?
Brad, all right.
Brad, are you brushing your teeth every day?
And that concludes our Brad Geiger theater moment.
Oh, that was eerie.
Oh, no. The answer was Ipschmidt clams.
Today's Brad Geiger theater moment has been brought to you by Great Lakes Mayonnaise. Great Lakes Mayonnaise making a good spread every time.
Henderson Valley eggs. You're going to love our eggs.
Hey, well, gents, on that note, should we wrap it up for the week?
Yeah, I think we should.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what a great show we've had today.
Okay, well, I'll let everyone know who's on the little radio show then. It's Dave Kellett. He makes the pictures on those internets.
Thank you, Adam Sandler.
Oh, yeah, I'm doing Adam Sandler, aren't I? Chris Straub is a smart ass. I don't like him. He's got a smart mouth. He uses two bigger words in his comic.
All right. Let's wrap it up.
All right. Dave Kellett, SheldonComics.com. Catch him every day. Chris Straub, Starslip.com. Catch him 5 days a week. Brad Geiger, evil-comic.com, now in color.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure his black and white constituency is very up in arms about it.
That's a topic for another web.
And you can find, if you're not one of the 11.8 million already who's found me, you can find me, Scott Kurtz, at PvPonline.com, celebrating 10 years PvP.
Oh, great.
10 years of dick and fart jokes, PvP. This has been another episode of Webcomics Weekly. This rainbow represents the fact that we'll never do this again. Goodbye. This is where the music comes in now. Bring!